Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 5 of NML Crossing, where we're wrapping up our first week of coverage here. Because I don't have a I don't have a schedule for this show, but internally, I told myself I wanted to do Monday through Friday for this. And if my math is right, and it might not be because calendars have never been my strong suit, this episode should be hitting on a Friday. Fingers crossed that's the case. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows, right? That's not to say there won't be anything over the weekend. That's also not to say that there'll be definitely something every Monday through Friday. It's just one of them uncharacteristic New Year's resolutions to be a little bit more prolific and, I suppose, just productive overall. Now, today, we're going to be talking about, well, one of those books that, you know, when we talked about Shadow of the Bat, I commented that, like, I was shocked that Shadow of the Bat was still a thing in 1998. Well, here's another book like that. Asriel. We'll be talking about Asriel. Asriel went like 100 issues. How did that happen? That's so bizarre to me. It feels so rooted in, like, the early mid-90s glut that to see it still going, I don't want to say going strong because I don't have any access to sales or anything, but still going as we approach the turn of the century, very, very bizarre. And, you know, a little anecdote about the Asriel series, a recent anecdote, actually. In the past few weeks, you know, I've been talking about digging into the bins a lot. It's pretty much my pastime, right? So in the past few weeks, as I've been putting the pieces together to put this project together, Asriel was one of those gaping holes in my collection. Because, like I said, I didn't even realize that it went as long as it did, despite having some issues toward the end of the run. But anyway, you know, I've been hitting pretty much every single comic store in my area. Like, we're talking 60-mile radius, every single shop. And that's comic stores, used bookstores, record stores, hobby stores, toy stores, anything, any store that I know have or suspect might have a long box or two to rifle through. And, you know, I'm sure this isn't something exclusive to my fandom or shopping habits, but you know how you have, like, your regular stores? I'm sure many listening have their regular comic shops that they go to once a week, maybe multiple times a week, at least multiple times a month to keep up with whatever it is they're keeping up with. And you might also have those shops that maybe you let build up. You know, you don't visit them except for, like, twice a year. I mean, this is my experience here. And I'm sure it's, like I said, it's not exclusive to me. All over the course of the past few weeks, I have been making those, you know, those pilgrimages to the comic shops I don't usually frequent. And it's kind of funny, the reaction you get going to a comic shop that you haven't been to for a long time and having a very distinct want list or need list. You know, I'm coming up to the counter with, like, a stack of books with the No Man's Land caution tape going down the left-hand side of the cover. And I've gotten a couple of different reactions, you know, when I plop the pile down to be checked out. You know, sometimes it's like, oh, you're reading No Man's Land. You know, and it's like, yeah. Other times they look at you like you're a lost puppy who, like, wandered in there and just, like, it's weird. It's like they look at me like, oh, this? Like, I'd somehow, like, hoodwinked myself into picking up this variety of books. It's very, very bizarre. But when you get the folks who actually take notice and engage, and they're like, oh, you're reading No Man's Land, or, oh, have you ever read this before? Why are you reading it now? And I got one such question, and I said that I was I didn't even say I was doing a show about it, just that it was going to be, you know, my reading project for, you know, the first portion of this new year. And I went on to explain that, you know, I knew the broader strokes of the story since I did read those abridged trade collections from the turn of the century. And he kind of looked at me and he's like, I don't want to discourage you. You know, there's a lot of good in this story, but there's also a lot of not so great. He's like, it kind of overstates its welcome. He told me that he was a completionist during the No Man's Land run, so he was there every week buying, you know, every subsequent chapter, every tie-in, everything. He told me to stick with it, but, you know, maybe not have high expectations for some of it. And I kind of, like, raised an eyebrow, and I was like, you're not talking about Asriel, are you? And he started to laugh a bit. And he said, he's like, I don't want to say anything bad about it, but some of those are going to be not difficult to get through. I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was just like a don't give up sort of thing. It's like, they're not the best, but, you know, just you take them as they come, which that's solid advice for like a normal human who reads comic books and puts them away. But for an idiot who reads them multiple times and then talks to himself into a microphone about them for however long, it's, you know, that's a different kind of ask. Because if anyone out there listened to any X-Lapsed episodes, any of the 400 of those, you'll know that I kind of go deep. But we will do our best to take that advice under consideration and, you know, try to take things as they come. Speaking of which, how about we get into today's book here, which is, of course, Asriel. It's Asriel issue number 40. I can't believe there was an Asriel number 4, much less 40, but here we are. April 1998 cover date. Story is called Cataclysm Part 4, Hour of the Quake. Written by Denny O'Neill with pencils by Roger Robinson. Inks, James Pasco. Colors, Demetrius Basuokos. Names are my kryptonite, I tell you. So them colors are by Demetrius and Prismacolor. Letters, Ken Bruzanek, maybe? That's easy enough. Edits, Chuck Kim and Archie Goodwin. Cover price, $1.95. Now, as we open, Asriel's on a chopper being piloted by a fella called Nomos, who I can't remember in the slightest. He's apparently Jean-Paul's mentor, dating back to his very first appearance. Who knew? Well, probably a lot of you, but I don't think this hairy fella has crossed my mind in 30 or so years. Now, another anecdote regarding those very first appearances of Asriel. I was recently in a used record store tracking down a reprint of the Harley Quinn one-shot that we're going to have to cover for the show. I considered actually getting a, you know, first or second edition of the actual prestige format one-shot, and it should go without saying that that's a fairly spendy book, but I considered it. I also tried to see if there were any reprints, and that story is not reprinted very often at all. I thought for sure that would be part of that 5-volume abridged version, but it wasn't. I was like, oh crap, I'm going to need to track this thing down. And I mean, I was so sure it would be in those collections that it was kind of a shock to realize that I never read the thing. You know, it just, I never owned it. I never read it. I actually missed the comic shop the week it came out. And the next week, it was already up on the wall for like $25, which, looking at the prices now, is nothing. But I remember I could kick myself for not, you know, buying it back then, of course. But I remember thinking like, wow, that's a little spendy for something that just came out last week. But I mean, you only know what you know. Anyway, DC reprinted or collected that Harley one-shot in a collection in like 2017 that was available at a local shop for, I think it was like $8. It had like a $25 cover price, but it was used and, you know, good enough condition. So I was like, okay, I'll grab it. I'll have that to read for the show. And while I was there, it was right next to a copy of the Sword of Azrael trade collection, the you know, the first one they put out back like right after it came out, the miniseries. And I pulled it out just to take a look at it, and it had a 99-cent price tag on it. I was like, oh, okay. So I bought that too, and I haven't opened it. It's actually sitting on a pile of trades, not 3 feet away from me, but I'm guessing this Nomos fella is, he looms large in that trade. Sorry for the tangent, you guys know how I am. Anyway, back to the story. We're pre-earthquake. And these two are, you know, Azrael and Nomos. They're delivering the defeated Bane back to Blackgate. And it looks like Azrael's coming off a four-part Return of Bane storyline. And, I never realized how Bane was, like, regularly jobbed out following his debut in Nightfall, where he was, I over-romanticize things, of course, but, like, he hit like right at a sweet spot in my fandom. I was like 12, 13. So he was like a generational villain to me. It's like, oh, he was like Doomsday level, you know? And I mean, parallels could be drawn, of course, but to see him getting taken out by Asriel and hold that thought, because it's going to get better. Anyway, again, Jean-Paul notes that during this flight, he'd noticed some erratic bat and geese behavior going on, and he wonders if perhaps these little flying beasts know something he does not. This gives him an eerie feeling, where the closer they get to Gotham, the more ill at ease he's becoming. Bane pipes up to suggest that Jean-Paul's having second thoughts about turning him back into Blackgate. He starts to appeal to Azrael. He suggests that they're pretty much two of a kind. They're one and the same, the two of them. He reminds JP that Batman discarded him just as soon as he was no longer of use. Not only that, Batman also scorned and ignored him. Now, Bane continues making this argument, and he decides to offer up a partnership, wherein they could team up and become wealthy beyond imagination and pretty much rule anywhere they'd like. From here, we hop over to Gotham at 7:01 p.m., We've got Mackenzie Bach and Sarah Essen waiting for Azrael to arrive with Blackgate's latest resident. So I suppose this was the special assignment that Commissioner Gordon was telling Bullock about last episode over in Batman 553. Now, Sarah Essen says that next to the Joker, Bane is the most dangerous criminal one could ever hope to meet. Perhaps it's worth noting here that Essen is being referred to here as Captain, when in Batman she was called Lieutenant. I'm not sure which one was true, nor that it really matters all that much, just something I wanted to note. Now, Essen thinks that she feels the ground shaking a bit, and suggests that maybe they're drinking too much coffee. Just then, the Az chopper lands, and Bane is escorted off by a gaggle of Gotham's finest. Bach, here, he's referred to as Hard Case. His nickname is actually Hard Back. And this only stood out to me because I made the same mistake. I've been incorrectly referring to him as Hardcase in my notes for several days now. So, I don't know, a little vindicated that Denny had the same error, but also, why is the error in the book? I don't know. Anyway, Essen awkwardly greets Azrael. And I gotta admit, outside of a few crossover tie-ins, I never read any Azrael. The character just never appealed to me. And any time I'd pick up an issue on a lark, it did precious little to hold my attention or make me want to come back for more. All that to say, Azrael's very awkward here. I don't know if he's just an awkward dude, or if this exchange with Essen is awkward as an indictment on his current bout of eeriness regarding Gotham. The conversation doesn't get long to linger, though, because just then, the quake hits. The ground beneath them opens up, sending bodies into the fissure below. Bane manages to break free amid the chaos, and he KOs a few cops and takes off on foot. Azrael takes off after him before falling into one of the fissures himself. Now, it's worth noting, narration at this point is coming from some talking head news reporters, and it reminds me of how they would deliver exposition over in Spawn. You know, where you'd have that news reporter just talking about what's going on and stuff. Anyway, in two pages, we get some conflicting Richter scale numbers. We get 7.5 and 7.65. Not that that really matters. Now, as Asriel pulls himself back up to ground level, he sees a nearby police car start to fall into another newly made fissure. Oh, and there's an officer trapped inside the car as well. Asriel has to choose between chasing Bane and saving the officer. Only he doesn't, because Hardback Case is there to direct traffic. Bach says, hey, get Bane. I got the guy in the car, so I guess that was a good use of pages? I don't know. From here, we follow our man deeper into Gotham. At 7:05, he's blasted by an exploding water main, which... It kind of looks funny. Like he's just hit by, like, water out of nowhere. A bit later, he's nearly crushed by falling bricks. Just after that, he narrowly avoids being blown to bits by a busted gas main. And finally, for all my quicksand fans out there, he nearly drowns in liquefacted soil. When he finally regains his bearings, he finds himself stood before the Gotham City Union Bank. He spots a survivor who is totally and understandably freaked the F out. Not only did he just survive the quake, but he also just witnessed a couple of his co-workers being moited to death by a giant luchador. Now, it's 7:12 p.m. when Asriel finally enters the bank, and he locates Bane just inside the vault. Bane once again goes into his sales spiel. He shows our man the millions and millions of dollars just lying there, free and ready to take. They could take it, they could run away together, start a new life, rule the world, do whatever. Asriel doesn't even stop to think about it. We just get some, hey man, I'm nothing like you, sort of chatter from him. And then they fight. For a single page. One page. And we close out with Asriel dragging the KO'd Bane away. And that's it. That's where we end it. Next time out, we'll be taking a look at Detective Comics number 720. But how about we talk about this? This might not be fair, but coming into this, I had an expectation. I definitely expected that this issue would be the weakest chapter of the opening few that we've already covered, and in that regard, it didn't disappoint. Again, it might not be fair to say, but as I mentioned, Asriel was never really my guy. Again, I don't have any idea how he was able to maintain his own ongoing series for like 100 issues. Cynically, I think maybe it's a case of like, hey, we got Denny here. We got to give him something to do. Like perhaps he had a contract that guaranteed him an ongoing writing gig, like a monthly book on top of his editorial duties. I don't know. Speaking of editorial duties, this issue, as mentioned, did have a few missteps in that regard. We had Sarah Essen's rank, which, for all I know, it was wrong in Batman. I don't know. Might have been wrong here, might have been wrong there. It shouldn't have been wrong. It shouldn't have been different. Bach's nickname, and hell, within two pages, we got two different Richter scale readings. Again, to be fair, I'm saying fair a lot, aren't I? to be fair, I doubt that I'd have noticed any of this had I not been reading this with a more analytical eye. Still, though, they are errors or they are contradictions, and it's not a good look. On the subject of good looks, how about Bane getting his butt kicked in such short order? You know, one page against Asriel. Now, I'm on record as having checked out on DC Comics during most of the 1990s. I only dipped the very tip of my toe in for things like Death of Superman, only some of Nightfall. I didn't even go through Nightfall, just bits and pieces of it, and some of Zero Hour, which didn't make a lick of sense to me then, because why would it? Because I had no context for anything. So I was not around for Long-Haired Superman, Electric Blue Superman, Kyle Rayner becoming Green Lantern, that Jurgens Teen Titans, anything Batman-related. I was just not part of the DC fandom at this point. I didn't get into Batman with intention to actually continue collecting it until the post-No Man's Land era, where it was very, very distinct covers. Like they had that weird blocky sort of Art Deco sort of look to them where like everything was like in that bold typeface, not really stylized logos, but stylized in a way, I suppose. But that's when I got into Batman. So all this stuff is new to me. So that said, I always just assumed that Bane never stopped being like this force of nature sort of threat. He always reminded me like early Venom over in the Spider books before they nerfed him. Like the villain answer to the how do we break the hero question. And in Bane's case, literally. I figured he'd just be this threat that was always in the writer's back pocket waiting to be re-unleashed onto their good guy. And I mean, Spider-Man had to like make Venom believe he killed him in order to pull up his radar for a bit. That's how scary a threat Venom was. And I figured that Bane was going to be, you know, Batman's answer to that sort of menace. But apparently not. And I mean, I never read Legacy. I do know Bane was a part of that. I know Ra's al Ghul was like the main bad guy. But Bane was there too. I couldn't say what happened in it just yet. I don't know. It's just weird seeing him get repeatedly beaten by friggin' Asriel of all people. And again, I got biases, I guess. I got my own preconceived notions on these characters. But I don't know. It's just kind of weird. Especially with such quickness and ease. I don't know. Is anybody buying this? And by this, I mean the story of Asriel whooping the fella who broke the bat. And I guess the series itself. I don't know, any Asriel completionists out there? Again, I'm probably being unfair, since at the end of the day, this wasn't bad. This wasn't a bad issue. It just wasn't anywhere near as good as the chapters that preceded it. And that said, I'm not going to lie, I am a bit trepidatious about having to cover so much Asriel in this project. Hopefully it flows smoothly. Hopefully it's good stuff, you know? I'm going to be open-minded about it. And we won't be reading Asriel again until issue 47. And that is the issue that actually kicks off the official Road to No Man's Land subgroup, subsection of this greater whole, I guess. And it's an issue. It's a weird one. It's a weird one. It's going to be a 3-issue arc of Asriel. And it starts with a flip book. Are you familiar with these flip books here? I'm a pretty anal sort of collector. You know, everything kind of has to be in its place. And my organization style is probably different from everybody else's. When I talk to people about how they organize their collections, it's usually a very, very blunt and simple, oh, alphabetically. It's like, I can't do that. I gotta make sure, like, I've got, like, families clustered together, and it's just a weird way that I do things, and, like, I'll put certain books with other certain books that are thematically same just in my own messed up head. So a flip book like that is one of those things that makes me itch and keeps me up at night, because that's just how precious I am. It's Asriel 47 on one end, right? You flip it over, and it's Shadow of the Bat number 80. Uh-huh. It's not even Asriel 48. I mean, it's a completely different book. And according to all the No Man's Land reading order lists that I found, they're not even supposed to be read one after the other. Oof. You know, it's like we have the 3-issue run on Asriel. Then we have a 3-issue run on Batman. Then we have a 3-issue run on Shadow of the Bat. Yeah, I mean, add to that, I don't even know which long box to file the damn thing in. So, double oof, I guess. I do remember DC doing something like this during the New 52 era with, I want to say, Supergirl and Red Lanterns? Because I guess Supergirl was, like, adjacent to the Red Lanterns for a minute. And I remember that frustrated me to no end then. Now that I think about it, I'm starting to get a little bit itchy about, I don't even know which box I put that in. Oy. Anyway, I have long lost the plot here, so let's bring it home. To sum up, this, despite everything I've said, was not a bad issue at all. Definitely the weakest so far, but certainly worth a read. It went down smooth, you know, it was not a bad issue. The art was great, and I don't know, as much as I disagreed, not, maybe not so much disagreed, but the portrayal of Bane seemed a little bit off to me here, I still dug it. I liked him appealing to Asriel. I liked, because that's something that never really made sense to me anyway. That's a really cool thing about the character, is that he was thrust into the spotlight so quickly and taken out of it just as quickly. And as Bane put it here, he was scorned and ignored by the person who put him into the position in the first place. And I like that. I like that that's kind of a bone of contention, or a potential bone of contention, where Asriel could have those feelings start to bubble up again. And the fact that Bane knows about that and is kind of picking at that scab is pretty cool. You know, I mentioned Bane is kind of a like a force of nature type of threat, which I think discounts his intelligence. You know, he's not a brainless doomsday busting out of a, you know, underground containment unit. This is a pretty smart dude. You know, he's a very smart dude who knows how to play off the weaknesses both physically and emotionally of whoever he's being pitted up against. So I thought that was really, really cool. So again, a good issue, just the weakest that we've covered so far. And, I mean, we have barely scratched the surface of this thing, though. I'm pretty sure with this episode and issue, we're only like 1/30th of the way through the story. I see conflicting numbers for how many issues are involved in this, and I think in my mind I've averaged them out to like 150. So yeah, if that is the case, we are 1/30th of the way there. So that's a heck of a lot of time for our bar to be raised and lowered. So hey, we'll go back to the beginning of the episode. We will take them as they come. But I think I've dragged this out as far as I possibly can. Of course, I'd like to hear your guys' thoughts as well on this issue, on this title, on this run, on whatever the hell you want. Tell me about your crazy filing systems and organizational methodologies as it pertains to your long boxes or short boxes. And if you are a alphabetical only, I envy you very, very much for being able to do something like that. I wish I could. And of course, you could send those thoughts over to weirdcomicshistory@gmail.com, or you could pop over to chrisisoninfiniteearths.com. You can find me, you know, all the places you were able to find me before. You could still find me at all those places now. And speaking of which, what the hell happened to Twitter? I know they have a new name now. I know it's not Twitter anymore, but the whole place just has a weird, empty feel to it. Am I the only one who noticed that? I mean, it just feels like, you know, I think we as content creating type people will often go to the old shouting into the void sort of descriptor of getting stuff out there. But now it's literally like that. It's like, it just feels so empty. Feels almost artificial. I don't know. That's probably not a good descriptor for it, but it just feels weird. It feels different. Anyway, with all that having been said, I would like to thank you all so much for sharing some of your day with me today. And until next time, I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya. Makes it harder to think straight, starting over after it breaks.